Oh, it's so fun that Pastor Eddie was here just for that. The last time we ever get to hear that. Professional musician back in his day, we're switching him over to rap soon. This is the last message in our series of Chasing Carrots. And again, we owe a word of thanks to Life Church for providing the framework and the inspiration for this message. I would like today to present to you a timeline of the comfort-like life cycle. And I want to do that through the lens of dating in my early 20s. Here's how this works. I found it uncomfortable to be a single person. And so I was very interested in dating. And so instead of remaining the general slob that I am, instead of being careless about what I look like, or I put comfort aside and cleaned up, and I endured the discomfort of trying to save enough money to take these young lady out somewhere, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and then you actually have to ask the person, which is uncomfortable, and then you have to actually go on the date, which is uncomfortable. How many of us would disagree that dating is just plain uncomfortable? It is not fun. Everyone who's single and is dating, we grieve with you. However, let's just hypothetically say that it all works out and there's love and romance in the air and there are wedding bells and rings exchanged. And so if you're me, you're thinking, I'm married. I now get to enjoy the comfort of being married. Which means, if you're me, being a little more comfortable about how I look, what I'm wearing, what I'm eating, how often, or just not at all, that I'm working out. I mean, be honest. How many of you look and behave the same way that you did when you were dating? Think about shaving, men and women. It's not the same thing. Anyway, if you're me, you quickly find out that that joy, that comfort of being married, quickly leads to the discomfort of arguments and conflict and strife. And so you have to go through all of that discomfort of two people trying to become one. You have to go through all that tough challenge of experiencing the hardship to find that smoother ground, that more mature level of marital maturity. And with each new achieved level, there is great comfort until the next discomfort happens, right? Anyway, I find the cycle of comfort and discomfort to be cyclical and never ending. Okay, I have a secret. I kind of hate that I'm on camera for this, but I am not the kind of pastor that has that encyclopedia type of brain that can rattle off a verse and its reference. I can't do that. I can't do that with worship songs. I've been singing these songs all my life. You put a worship title on screen, I have no idea what the lyrics are until they appear. My brain just doesn't work that way. I've just had to make peace with it. But I can quote Star Wars movies with you till the end, live long day. So when I prepare studies and sermons, I have to Google verses. I know there's a verse about something. Am I getting the words right? I have to Google just like you all. There's no shame in that. I say that on camera. There's no shame in that. Google away for your verse. However, it is not easy to find a Google search that condemns comfort. It's hard. And you might wonder, whoa, Jonathan, are you saying that Google does not have all the answers? Because that is not true. It took me a while. It was like a thunderbolt of a lightning strike to me. Google isn't a reflection of what exists in the world, and it's certainly not a reflection of what exists in the Bible. But it is an accurate reflection of what humanity searches for. And almost all of the search results yield passages that give you more comfort, because that's what we look for. More comfort is our default setting, and it's the backbone to all of our hopes and dreams. Is there any hope and dream you have that doesn't have more comfort? Oh, I really wish I could live, I sleep on a cot someday. I just really want to give away all my money and just not have any, none of us have those dreams. All of our hopes and dreams have at the underbelly more comfort. It is countercultural in the extreme to dismiss or condemn comfort. And you might ask, Pastor, why would we want to? Here's why. The first reason why. There's a lie that comfort operates on, and it's this. The lie is that life should be and is comfortable. Anyone who's over the age of 12, any child understands this. Life is not comfortable. You don't get to do what you want to do. Things go badly. All of my students all the time, like, why does this have to be so hard? Why are there taxes? Why is this? Why? It's just the whole, life should be easier. Why isn't it? Why me? There's a lie that life is and should be comfortable. We know it's a lie because of this verse, James 1. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. I hated this verse as a kid. My father quoted it to me all the time. Whenever you face trials of many kinds, I'm going to define trials here as the hardships that we suffer that are sourced from without, a natural disaster, a calamity, things that we have no control over. Those things that happen to you, those negative things, are trials. But then it's followed up with the testing of your faith, those things that we cause to ourselves, our own temptations, our own sins, our own wants. We must endure from without and within all of the hardships that is this life. This is the default stage of life. We are fallen. We are of sin. There is entropy and chaos in the world. So if the default setting is hardship and suffering, and comfort is a lie, are we bereft of any hope? No, of course not. We're in a church. We are all Jesus followers. Take a look at this verse, 1 Peter. There are significant resources that God offers to us. It starts with this. In that same theme, humble yourself. Humble yourself, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Why not turn to the God who desires to lift you up? There are some religions where you have to pay the entry fee. You have to bribe the God. You have to leave your offering in order to get that divine idol to respond to you. That's not our God. God is not bribed by our offering. He just straight up cares for you for eternally unchanging reasons of his own. The passage continues. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings. In other words, there is comfort in community. We, your Jesus-loving family, are meant to be a source of strength and of hope And if we do it right, of comforting presence. Pathways, I want to test that. This is a little risky for us. I want to see if this happens today in real time. So there's, go ahead and throw up that QR code. There's an app that we're going to try to use. It's called Slido. It allows us to create a group chat room. It is only one way you can put into it, and you know you can't answer back. But I'm going to ask you a question. What are you suffering through today? What has you seeking comfort? You can go to that website or just pull up your phone and do that QR code. And if you type in your answer, everyone else can see it as soon as they submit theirs. And you can have your, you can be anonymous if you'd like to, or tag your name to it. That's either way is up to you. This is our space. If you choose to include your name, then we commit to you this. We're definitely going to be praying for you. And, because most churches stop there, and we're going to offer to reach out, to offer company and comfort through your hardship. Here's the test. Pathways, I wasn't talking to this row when I said that. When you see a name or a hardship pop up on that screen, take the time to write a short encouraging phrase or a verse or a prayer. Would we take care of each other so that whoever wrote that can see all the different encouragements and comments and verses and supports scrolling through? Let us take care of each other. So, the first trick of our sinfulness is to tempt us to buy into the lie that life should be comfortable. And secondly, it offers these really shiny little trinkets that promise false comfort. Let's talk about those trinkets. There's a trap. So the trinkets, I'm going to call them the trap. There's first a lie, and then there's second a trap. The trap is that this, that, or the other thing, X, Y, or Z, is going to give me comfort. Think about what it is. You already know in your head. What is your go-to source of comfort? And does it really provide you comfort? I suggest to you that it's a trap. I suggest to you that God doesn't tell us in 1 John 2, it's a short verse, but there's all the world in this verse. Do not love the world or anything in the world. God's not being whimsically like selective here. It's not like I'm just going to make this up. He tells us to avoid behaviors because they hurt us. That's why they're labeled sin. The behaviors that he doesn't want us to do are labeled sin because they hurt us. And idolizing comfort hurts us. Ever since we chose this series, and even way beyond we started this series, I've been working on this topic. It was of divine glee that when we chose this series, and my wife said, wait, which topics do you have? And I said, I have the idol of comfort. And she very wisely just looked at me and did that little grin. I said, oh, that's going to be a good message for you. It's so subtle. I've worked for so long to trying to figure out my own idol of comfort and how it plays out, and it's so subtle. Let me point out some things to you. So, we started this series with money and stuff. Do you have a problem with seeking financial gain? Are you a little greedy? Is that where your comfort is? Because money is the source of your comfort? What about perfectionism? What's the underbelly to perfectionism? We achieved something, we thought, and it made us feel good. So we want more of that to make ourselves feel good about this. We earned that. I did that. Last week, Pastor Paul led us through this really deep study about self-image. And the comfort underbelly there is someone at some point affirmed you, and that felt good. And it clicked on something, and you just want more and more of it. Most of our sins have the pursuit of comfort underneath them. So here's the second. I'm sorry, I did not activate that Slido thing. Here you go. Now you can enter your prayer request. Oh, technical error, Jonathan. You're the tech guy. I'm going to ask you to think about yourself. What is your comfort trap? What is it that you normally go to for comfort? And does it actually give you relief? Does it actually give you peace? Does it actually give you rest? Or does it just keep spiraling? For those of you who haven't met her yet, my wife's name is Sonia. We got married a few years ago, and I have the privilege of being married to this incredible woman. And as great and as wonderful as these memories, our marriage is, we got married fairly late in life, and we had decades of pattern already set. And so our first years were, well, I'll say we had some friction, maybe a lot of friction. And it took us a long time to realize that we weren't arguing with each other's personality, that we were arguing with each other's sin. And once we identified that, once we cleared it up, it became the magic that it is today. All right, so for a little interview. Do I start? Okay, yeah, Sonia. It's Sonia, by the way. It took me like a year into our dating life to realize. She's like, what's my name? Sonia. That's not who I am. That's how it's spelled. All right. Sonia, in what form does your search for comfort manifest itself?
I would like you all to acknowledge the fact that he has made me go first to share these uncomfortable things.
Because I've got this mic.
So I would say, first of all, for those of you who don't know, I grew up in a family where my parents take foster children, and they ended up adopting five of them. And it's a wonderful thing, but it definitely created an environment of unpredictability, not knowing what to expect, and just change on a regular basis. I didn't know at the end of the day when I got home from school if there would be another new child or if the one that was there would have left. So it was a lot. And then unfortunately my first marriage was a lot of the same, very different circumstances, but a lot of change and unpredictability. So I would say that both of these living situations for me really oftentimes manifested in making me feel out of control, and there just wasn't a lot that I could obviously do about it. But I would say that in the midst of our marriage, Jonathan has really helped me to see that my go-to, my idol, when I start to feel like things are out of control, is to want to control things. And it doesn't really look like controlling people as much as controlling circumstances around me or things within myself. Like feel like things are out of control, I'll start to be more careful about what I eat, or I'll exercise more, or the bed has to be made absolutely perfectly, or things on the kitchen counter have to be in just the right place, things that absolutely don't matter and are not helping to address what's really going on.
I mean, that's not dangerous. It's fine. Like, okay, so you like the pencil at 90 degrees and you like the tissue box right there, and it has to be, there's nothing really wrong except if you have to live with you. But what is the trap then of control? How did you find it not helpful?
Well, it's a vicious cycle because I'm doing all of these other things that are, in the end, distracting me from figuring out what it is that has me feeling so out of control and actually addressing it. I'm instead spending time doing all of these other things that absolutely don't matter and, you know, wasting that time.
You have said that it doesn't really manifest in controlling people, and forgive me, my love, I'm going to push back on that just a little bit. We've talked about the different levels of your stress and how it manifests in control. Do you remember like the levels 1, 2, and 3? Can you do a quick 10 seconds on what those levels are? No? Me? I'll do it. I have noticed, having been married to her for a while, I noticed that when she was sort of stressed, things had to be in the right place. So when I moved in with all my stuff, you can imagine how stressed she was. Well, your stuff can't go there. That's where that thing goes. Why does it have to go there? Can't my thing go there? Like, level one stress was things had to be in their right place. But then I started to notice when she got really stressed, she started to really work out more, like almost incessantly, as if it was the only thing she could control, and it was just a need. It wasn't just a healthy habit. It became like a need for her. And I would hypothesize, he said very, very gently, that when your stress level is very high, it manifests as trying to control, like, well, did I do that thing? And when did I do that thing? And how did I do that thing? And did I do it the right way? And can you just please do that right now, please? And so it's not really control, but you need it to be done that way. Is that an accurate reflection of how it's been manifesting? And
yes, definitely. And again, you've really helped me to see that when I start really worrying more about everybody in my environment, those closest to me especially, like, well, let me know when you get there and what time you're going to be there and, you know, how are you doing with your health and every specific detail of my business going just so, yes, it gets to that level 3.
When we were first dating, I run a little late. It's me. What can I do? I'm 10 minutes late, and she would be frantic. We should call the restaurant and let them know so they don't cancel our reservation. At Panera? Like, all right. Sonia, what would you say, what would it look like for you to eventually find freedom from this trap of chasing control?
Yeah. It would look like finding true rest. And I don't mean sleep. I'm not talking about sleep. I'm talking about, for those of you who are familiar with the story of Mary versus Martha, it would be choosing what is better. Choosing to rest and be still with God and deal with whatever it is that has me so strung out, or choosing to rest with you, and resulting in the peace and the joy that God promises, if we'll do that.
So the control promises you peace and rest, but it steals it from you instead and distracts you from the real peace and actually denies you the ability to have actual peace and rest.
Yes.
That's really, thanks for sharing that. And our interview is over. There's no more to this interview.
That's not true.
Your turn.
This is going to be fun.
Whose idea was this?
So, Jonathan, you have shared with me in the midst of our marriage that one of your idol manifestations is actually seeking comfort through food. What would you say usually triggers you to seek food as your source of comfort?
I deny the accusation. What triggers me to look for comfort, this is where that subtlety comes in. If I've had a hard day, I'll reward myself with food. If I've done a good job, I'll reward myself with food.
Why are you clapping?
If she's gotten mad at me for something, I will comfort myself with food. It just makes sense. But it gets to be, I'm bored. I'm going to have food. I'll not be hungry, but I'll be in the grocery store like, ooh, well, that looks tasty. Let's just put that in the cart. Anything, it becomes that trigger for that reward, becomes the slightest thing. It's Tuesday. Well, let's have some food.
And why do you think this particular trigger or idol manifested for you when you were younger?
Well, it's probably your fault.
I didn't know you then.
I mean, I could blame it on being Chinese. Every time the Chinese people get together, there's food involved. Every time Christians get together, there's food involved. Chinese Christians, those potlucks are like amazing. But as a Jesus follower, as a young man, I was trying to honor God, but life was hard. I had friends who would just hook up, but I didn't want to do that. I had friends who would just go out and drink, but my body can't handle any alcohol, so I couldn't do that. There are some crazy people who like to work out. I don't want to do that. So food seemed to be the easy, cheap go-to. I was single. What did it matter? What did it matter that my apartment was surrounded by fast food restaurants? What did it matter that my pantry was just full of goodies and nothing healthy at all? I mean, what? It didn't hurt anyone. And so for all of those 20 years of being a single person, and intentionally single, not intending to get married, I thought, well, food is a harmless outlet for comfort. Little did I know.
And would you say, when you go down that road and give in to that temptation, that food actually brings comfort?
She's using her counseling voice. So late at night, after I've eaten something and I come home and I make sure she can't smell it on my breath, she'll say, do you feel better about having eaten that juicy burger? No. Why did you eat it then? I wanted it. No, it's a lie, right? I think that I want to reward myself, so yeah, big fat juicy steak is going to be awesome. And then an hour later, ooh, that does not feel good. I want to have this burger or all this salt or all this fast food, and then I feel unhealthy and I feel gross, and it's just a cycle. And then I feel bad, which makes me want to comfort myself, so I get more food. I mean, I'm not craving broccoli and kale, people. Like, I'm... It's a cycle. I want it, it hurts me, and I want some more. I think that's some kind of definition of idiocy or addiction or idolatry or something, but comfort is a trap.
So what would it look like for you to find freedom from this idol?
I'm never gonna have freedom. Just gonna go to heaven. We've been working on this for years. This isn't an easy answer. I know yours isn't an easy answer. But it's important to us to have that goal in mind, to pray for and ask boldly for that freedom, to have in mind what it looks like. For me to have a healthy relationship with food, I don't know what that looks like, but I'm still searching for it. For her to have a healthy relationship with control, to be at peace no matter what happens, we're still searching for it. But it no longer causes conflict between us because we know it's each other's sin manifestation, not that person. And we've done it through a lot of devotions, through a lot of hard conversations, a lot of friction, a lot of resolution. We just wanted to give you a little peek inside our marriage and the subtlety of the trap and the lie that comfort is. Would you say thanks to Sonia? All right. So, here's that second slider. Why don't you pull it up? Sorry, thanks for the wait. What is your comfort trap? Now that you've heard us talk about the subtlety of ours, you had a first guess before, and maybe that still holds true. But maybe there's something more subtle at play in your life that is stealing and robbing you of peace and rest. What is your comfort trap? You can put up that Slido again? There you go. No, the second one. The same thing will work. That's fine. What is your comfort trap? All right. Okay, so we've talked about how comfort is based on a lie. We've talked about how the sources of comfort are a trap. So let's finish with this. The truth about comfort. Where does comfort actually come from? In 2 Corinthians, this blew my mind. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, here we go. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ. Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. Pastor Jonathan, would say my students here, did you just finish telling us that comfort was a lie and a trap? How can God then be the God of all comfort? Ha ha, we got you, Pastor Man. Answer that little riddle. There is a true comfort, obviously, from God and in God alone. The real question is, what does that look like? What does authentic comfort from God actually look like? There's nothing wrong with food. There's nothing wrong with a modicum of control. There's nothing wrong with whatever your trap is. But if those are all at the source not fulfilling, not ever going to be able to fulfill you, then what does authentic comfort look like? We are aware that in a congregation of this size, there must be many of us going through hardship, be it financial, be it relational, be it the passing of family grief, be it illness, kids, family, something. What does true comfort look like? This blew my mind. In that verse, 2 Corinthians, and in fact all over the Bible, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. I know some of you hate it when I do this, but the Greek word for comfort there is parakaleo, which literally translated means to call near. So in Matthew 5, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. They will be drawn near. In 1 Thessalonians 4, comfort each other with these words. Draw near to each other with these words. I could go on for about half an hour of all the different verses that have this word in here. It's important, parakaleos, because in other passages of the Bible, when you come to the name of the Holy Spirit, paraclete, it's the same word. Comfort is the very name of the Holy Spirit. God, the divine being who is called near to your side. Pastor Jonathan, did you just trick us into an old school Sunday school answer? That the answer to every lesson is really Jesus? The answer to true authentic comfort is Jesus? Is that what you are saying? Is that what you just did? Yeah. Yeah, I did. And it's true. Drawing near to God. It's a $50 million question, and on the one hand, seems like a $5 answer. I get that. So on the one hand, just a little faith. enough to trust him to try. For those of you who are new to following Jesus, for those of you who are considering following Jesus, if you are in a hardship time, then we invite you to try, to test this. What does it look like to try to draw near to Jesus? If that's confusing to you, then ask someone here. Use that connection card and let us know. We'll reach out to you. We'll help you through this. So on the one hand, just a little faith. On the other hand, drawing near to God, we each have deeply rooted patterns of sin manifestation that will take years to break. We can cry out for divine delivery, and we should. But any therapist, any counselor, any good friend, any spouse, real change is hard. Breaking free from our idols is hard. But it starts with recognition, it starts with acknowledgement, it starts with the desire, it starts with prayer. It starts with asking for help. So, as I call up the worship team, let's do this. Here's our last Slido challenge. I'm going to ask you to risk it. Oh, that's the wrong one. I'm going to ask you to risk it. Would you type in a verse of encouragement for someone who is hurting? You can go to openbible.info/topics and put in the words draw near. This is a topical Bible search site. So if you're like me and you can't figure out where that verse is that you thought of, that you remember, maybe I think there's something in there, you can type in a search word into this site, openbible.info, type in draw near. And then would you do the congregation the blessing of copying that verse and putting it into the Slido? If you are suffering, if you are hurting today, I want you to see all those verses scroll by. I want you to screenshot, I want you to save this. I want you to hear and feel the congregation with you. We don't have the right words. We don't know what to do all the time, but we're with you. Church, would you minister to each other? Would you add verses? Would you add phrases of encouragement so that those who are hurting, those who are in a place of hardship, those who need comfort, they can see you responding to their spirit. Comfort is based on a lie. The things that we turn to for comfort are traps. True comfort only comes from your relationship with Jesus. If this is something you want to take a step forward in, if you are a mature believer and you have no idea how to take a step forward from where you are, that's what we are here for. Would you let us help you? Would you let us walk with you? If you are taking the first step for the first time, then let us know that. Use that connection card. Use the Slido. Put your name in there. Someone's going to reach out to you. If you are a mature believer and you have no idea what to do next because you're a mature believer, but I want to draw closer to God, I just don't know what to do, well, put that in there, and one of our small groups, one of our classes, someone is going to reach out to you and say, hey, we'll walk with you through this. We'll help you figure this out. I don't have the answer, but we're going to walk with you to figure this out quickly. There are some discussion prompts. You have them in your email. You have them in the YouVersion app. They're a model of what Sonia and I worked through to try to find our idols. And if you prefer a class environment more than a small group, well, then come on Sunday mornings. We're hybrid at the moment. We're mostly online at the moment, but we'd like to shift gradually towards hybrid. We'd love to put you in a class environment where you could be surrounded with other mature believers who can help you draw nearer to God. By the way, that verse, draw near to God, draw near to the God who draws near, and you will draw near. Is the point clear enough? if you prefer to live and walk through life together, well then join a small group. Or if we don't have one that fits you, reply in and we'll make a small group for you and all the others who are like you to help you find a loving community to walk through life together. Or maybe you are of the action-oriented. Talking with people is not your thing. You'd rather be doing something with someone while they're doing something. Well, then join one of our teams. Join a tech team. Join a host team. Join the building team. Do something that moves you from your isolation into Jesus-following community. That's what we're offering to you today. We don't have the answer to your comfort, but we have our presence. And with enough presence and with enough love and enough care, we'll help you find a way to break through your idol. And you'll help us.